And welcome to the Court of Appeals. Our first case this morning is, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Shukur versus Halverson et al. The court file number is A21-0959. Just so that you let, so that I inform everyone, Judge Smith and I are obviously on Zoom. Judge Klapek is also participating. He's having some computer problems, so he is also participating, but you won't be able to see him, but you'll be able to hear his voice, and he will be able to hear you. So we actually do have a full panel ready to go. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This oral argument is being recorded, however, and will be available to listen to tomorrow, but our rules prohibit any private recording by either counsel or any of the parties who are listening remotely. So with that, counsel for the appellant, you may begin, please. And just begin by telling us who you are and a loud, clear voice.
Good morning, Your Honors. Nathan Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, appearing on behalf of the appellants, Eric and Jeff Halverson. This is a matter that was litigated about a commercial lease for a commercial property in northern Ramsey County in Minnesota. The first issue I want to talk about here is that this is two brothers who are involved in this case. There's Jeff Halverson, who's the older brother, and Eric Halverson, who's the younger brother, who operated this, the younger brother operated a pizza business, and he was the purchaser of the property from his brother, Jeff Halverson, as a contract vendee. And for 23 years, he operated a pizza business in this building. He was not an absentee landlord. He's there all the time. He operates the business itself. This is not subdued. The trial court below found that Jeff Halverson was jointly and severally liable on this lease or on this contract dispute. This was an error. It's not subject to reasonable dispute in this case that Jeff Halverson was a contract vendor and that Eric Halverson was the contract vendee and therefore,
Mr. Hansen, did you, I know you sort of argued this below, but did you ever bring a formal motion to dismiss Mr. Jeff Hansen? Because normally that's where we would see this, you know, him being separated from the lawsuit.
I was the second attorney on this case. So okay. The case came to me in a trial posture.
Then I think I have my answer.
Yeah.
But you did argue this below, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I didn't see that in the transcript.
Yeah. That he's a contract for deed, vendor.
Rather than spend any more time on this, because I think it's pretty straightforward, I was wondering if you could focus on the issue of the damages. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You're welcome.
The record reflects here, and I'm going to try to stick to the record reflects here that Mr. Shukur operated this business for 4.5 years as a convenience store in the area, and that he's testified that it was profitable up until 2019. And the court gave as a measure of his damages the amount that he testified that he paid for the business 4.5 years prior. It's our contention, in accordance with our briefing, that this is not an appropriate measure of damages.
And then, Mr. Hansen, what would you argue is the date of the breach?
Well, our argument in the trial court was the first breach was when Mr. Shakur immediately did not provide insurance for the premises in accordance with the lease.
Well, let me rephrase that. Based on what I'm trying to, I understand that arguments, and then the district court ruled that relating to the roof repairs, there were damages which excused any obligation to pay rent. But my question is from what does the record support in terms of the district court's view as to the breach of the commercial lease from which the damages should flow from? Was it 2019? In terms of a failure to repair the roof or maintain the roof?
Well, first of all, in the best case scenario for them, that would be a date like that, if they were to measure that. But we would contend that their first breach, and then the plaintiffs or the appellees' failure to mitigate. He was allowed to mitigate himself under this contract and completely apportion those damages to the appellant Eric Halverson in this case. He could have gotten whatever fixed and kept his business going and taken it right off of his rent to his satisfaction with a licensed individual, and he could have done so. He never did that. And then in addition to that, my client, this is a commercial lease. He's claimed from the beginning damages for unpaid rent under the lease, and he's testified as to extensive damages that were done to the premises, in addition to breaches of the lease with regard to things that the appellee, Mr. Shakur, had done to the roof. He sent people up on the roof to put DirecTV in, and he did not obtain the consent of Mr. Halverson. He had the lottery installed, which involved digging into the roof and messing around with the roof, and he did not get the consent of Mr. Halverson. He breached this lease, and even directly with regard to the roof, on numerous occasions. He never, at all, was denied a certificate of occupancy. If there's anything that are damages here, the damages should flow, even if there was an offset, they should flow in favor of Mr. Eric Halverson.
So, Mr. Hansen, I want to make sure I understand, your argument as to the damages. I mean, while consequential damages can sometimes be recovered in a commercial lease breach dispute, they generally have to flow from the breach of the lease. Now, as I understand it, your argument is, well, first of all, are you conceding that he could recover the damages for his lost business, but your dispute is it needs to be measured from the proper valuation date?
I don't concede that.
Okay.
Did
you dispute that he was not entitled to any of the value of the business, the lost business below? I mean, I see the foreseeability argument in the summary judgment motion, but I mean, did you just say, well, this is totally an improper measure of damages to begin with? At most, it should be lost profits, which, one could argue are or may not be speculative, but in any event, it's not the value of the business. Did you argue that below at trial?
Well, we argued that he was not entitled to any damages at all in the trial below, that he breached the lease and that he was not entitled to. We never conceded that he was entitled to any damages at all. And but if you were to look at this, reviewing it from this award of damages perspective, the idea that it was the amount of money that he paid for the business 4.5 years prior, when he testified that claimed that the business was profitable up until 2019. Then he gets 4.5 years of the business for free at the expense of my client. He
so,
did not.
So if I understand your argument is at the very least, because you're saying you dispute, you know, that that's a proper measure of damages, at least it's the value of the business at the time of the breach, not at the time he bought it, you know, several years earlier. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Hansen?
No, I think it would be the value of whatever, if, but he didn't provide any testify this, it would be the value of whatever lost profits he had for the months that he could have operated it, and he should have mitigated his damages and fixed it. So, for example,
are you making that argument in this? I mean, I didn't, you know, there's some, I understand that argument, and that would be a traditional measure of damages, but in your brief, I didn't see that argument. I saw a dispute as an argument that, well, no, it's not the value of the business, it's lost profits. But what I saw is a dispute as to the valuation of the business, depending on, you know, from whether it's the day of the trial, you know, at the breach or, you know, several years earlier.
Well, as far as what the arguments were made in the brief, and they did not present any evidence about damages other than, I think, a handwritten note about what they asserted, what the value of the business would be.
But of course, you know, I mean, obviously the district court, at least as to the value of the business when he purchased it, you know, that was the evidence and it's preponderance of the evidence. And I assume the district court found that credible.
We do cite to the teach out case that's not a good measure of damages. And also the testimony was that belies the fact that he had been selling off and assets of the business. And he didn't provide any evidence from a business valuation expert, tax returns, or anything.
Mr. Hansen, did the plaintiff testify that, you know, as a result of the failure to repair the roof, his business was just, you know, worth nothing? It was totally wiped out. Was there evidence of that presented at trial by Mr. Hendrickson's client?
Well, he did testify that he couldn't make any more money and he couldn't be open and that he couldn't open his business. But I'm not so sure if he testified specifically as to that.
But like, for example, was there testimony that, you know, because of the roof leaking, because it hadn't been repaired, you know, all the inventory was, you know, damaged and, you know, all the stuff, the convenience store, you know, was spoiled and, you know, the pizzas were all wet and, you know, no one wants to buy wet pizza, you know.
No, not only wasn't there any testimony to that, but there wasn't any testimony that it was roof leaks that caused all of that water damage. He says that the pipes burst, but that's another case of this plaintiff's failure to mitigate. Specifically, there were water turnoff valves in the facility, assuming it was freezing or whatever like that, that you would do something to mitigate your damages and just not leave all the water turned on and to damage everything and to cause damage to my client's premises.
So following up on Judge Connolly's question, I had the same question. Was there testimony about, I assume at some point the store stopped operating and inviting customers in. Was there testimony about when that happened?
Yes. And I think he put a sign on the door. I think he just stopped coming in and he closed the door.
What date was that? Following up on Judge Smith's question.
I think it was in a winter time, like a February, like this time of year. So it would be like the February.
Well, we have winter every year, like winter of what year?
It'd be the 2018 or 2019. It'd be just a month or two before he left.
And presumably we could find that in the record.
Yeah, it's in the record.
So I can understand. I know that at the trial level, you claim that there were no there was no breach, but the trial court found that there was a breach on your client's part. And apparently you don't dispute that on appeal. I haven't seen that you're claiming that that trial court's determination was erroneous in some fashion. Am I correct?
No, we dispute that my client's breach was first. We say that they substantively breached that they breached the lease first. That the plaintiff breached the lease by not providing insurance. So the on the premises to my client. So I don't think that's it.
I'm looking at your brief, and I don't see where you are claiming that the trial court erred in finding that your client somehow breached this contract. It looks like you're spending most of your efforts on the erroneous award of damages.
They first breached, we raised the issue of the first breach on page 14 of our brief. The second paragraph down. So we raised that issue right there. And it looks like my time is up.
All right, Mr. Hanson, you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal, so you can expand on that point if you wish at that time. We will now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Yes, Your Honors, thank you. I am Bradley Hendrickson. I am here on behalf of Tesfaye Shakur. May it please the court, I will just jump in and talk about the damage issues that the court has questions on. I would note that I understand the appeal here is not to retry the case. I understand that appellant would like to readdress all the evidence and his case at appeal, but I think here it's important to understand that the evidence that was submitted sustains the trial court's findings, which sustains the judgment. And so with regard to the damages, it was rather straightforward. And the court held that the damages were foreseeable. And specifically, the evidence that was submitted was the amount that was paid for the business. And again, this is a small superette.
How is that an appropriate measure of damages?
This was what he had paid for the business. And
a number
I would
of years at the beginning, and after that, he had a number of years of profitable business. So how is the original purchase price an appropriate measure of damages for a breach which occurs sometime later?
The breaches in this case, Your Honor, as the record reflects, started almost immediately after the business was purchased.
Your client admit that he had 3 or 4 profitable years?
Your Honor, he did submit some evidence that was not awarded by the trial court as to amounts that he did earn per year, such as $40,000. But as the breaches progressed, there were leaks right away in 2015, demands to fix, and it was a continuous breach right up until the end in 2019.
Counsel, is the theory of the damages and relying on the purchase price that, but for the breach, he could sell the business in 2019 or 2020, whenever the date is, for roughly what he paid for it earlier? And did he testify to that? And did he testify that instead it's worth zero because of the condition of the building? I mean, what is it that, I assume that measure is supposed to be what he could otherwise sell the building for, excuse me, the business for, but for the breach. Is that the theory? And did he testify, did he or someone testify that it's actually now worth, he could obtain nothing for it?
That, and I think it's also important to note that this location had been there for since 1996, and that's in the record too. And so the evidence would show that, yes, he did have to shut this business completely down And this was the location that it had been in since 96. And the theory of damages is, yes, it is foreseeable that he would lose the business that he paid $136,882 for if the landlord would not fix the roof or provide the heat as shown. And the timeline is just constant. And the trial court found there was, you know, no less than 11 letters from my client to the appellants to fix the roof. There was nothing else he wanted but for the landlord to come in and repair the roof. And it simply did not happen. Even after they went to a rent escrow, an agreement which got put into a court order, the appellants didn't follow that. The city of Venice Heights got involved, was ordering it, and the roofs were never repaired. And up until the end of the record, the city testified that the roof was still leaking. And so
I'd like to follow up on Judge Smith's question. Was there any testimony that, well, in 2019, I tried to sell the business and no one was going to buy it? Or, you know, what is the evidence that the business, first of all, was worth zero at the time of the breach? And then second, what is the evidence that it was, well, let's start with that. What was the evidence that he presented? Because I assume there were no experts. Is that a fair statement?
I think that would be a fair statement, Your Honor. Okay.
So did he say, you know, I tried to sell this business and no one was going to buy it, so it's worth nothing. And so it's worth nothing, you know, it was worth something 4 years ago, so that's some measure of damages. Was there any evidence like that? Or
Your Honor, the evidence that came in was just the progression of the leaks from 2015 up until 2019, as I believe we were talking about or addressing before.
Right. And I could see, normally in a case like this, you know, the consequential damages would be the lost profits that he incurred, due to the breach. And he was selling, I don't know, X number of stuff in 2014 and making a profit. And then every year that the roof wasn't appeared, fewer and fewer people were not coming in. And therefore, you know, instead of making $50,000 a year, he's making zero, you know, zero times four is whatever. That's one measure of damages. I mean, you know, there's arguments about, well, you know, maybe it was due to other things other than the roof. But here, it's not even that. It's the value of the business 4 years ago. And what I'm struggling with is how that's a prop. Well, first of all, whether that's a proper measure of damages, I think that ship may have sailed, because the only issue in appeal is not that that's not a proper measure of damages, but that it's the valuation date. So normally, you know, the value of businesses change, and, you know, and I guess the most representative value would be the value it is from the time of the breach, which was several years later. So why am I wrong?
Your Honor, I would note that the breach did occur immediately after in 2015 when they entered into the lease. That's when the leaks occur. That's when Mr. Shakir...
Did the district court give a date of the breach in its order?
I do not believe there's a specific date of breach in the order, Your Honor. The continuous leaks that the appellant failed to address.
But I mean, he was still operating. I mean, was there ever a time when he was not operating the business between 2015 and 2000 or, you know, and trial? Like, did he just shut it down and just, okay, we're done now? Is there anything like that?
Your Honor, the testimony from Mr. Shakir, goes through the history and what he had to do and kind of the interference of when he had to put plastic over, you know, cash registers and merchandise that, you know, to protect it from the leaks coming in. So he goes through the history of it. And then right up until, you know, 2018, when there's no heat in the unit itself from October through January, basically, and never repaired. So there's absolutely no heat during the Minnesota.
This is in 2018.
That's in 2018, you know, after they went through the rent escrow action that appellants said they would fix it, never did. The trial court, it was disputed who, you know, tried to put the tarp up on the roof to prevent the leaks, but it was put over the HVAC system. The trial court determined that, you know, no matter who put it up there, appellants knew it was there. They never did anything to fix it, and Excel red tagged it, and there was no heat in the property. So there was no efforts. The trial record is just bare of any attempts, really, of anything that they did to fix the roof. And that's from 2015 until 2019. There's nothing credible. There's no documentation of anything they tried to do right after 2015 when they entered into the lease. And I will, we did cite the Fudali case in there, and that also kind of refers to the Klingenhertz case, you know, which does kind of get in there that insight to the standard construction case with regard to valuations in Minnesota. And this is, you know, really that findings of valuation will not be disturbed on appeal within the limits described by the evidence, even if they don't exactly adopt any of the witness testimony. So, you know,
now that case that you're citing, was that a commercial lease case?
That's a mechanic lien type of case there, trying to go in with the district court, trying to put a handle on what are the damages here in the valuation. And I would just say, you know, with how appellant would want it, of course, you know, what is the business worth at the end when there's no heat and no customers and nothing? That's how appellant would apparently want it, that the damages, the value of the business would be zero. And so the district court, you know, would be supported here in saying that this is the purchase price that he paid. There were requests to repair the roof continuously from 2015 up until 2019, and nothing was done with it. And it ended up in him losing what he paid for this business. And so
it sort of seems to me, counsel, that both parties would agree the business was worth nothing at some point. It was worth zero. Maybe both wouldn't. I want to hear from Mr. Hansen on that. And your argument is if it's worth nothing, it's not a going concern. He can't recoup the investment that he made 4 years earlier. Like, what do you subtract that you would have it? Even if you had an expert came in and said, this is worth nothing. It can't be sold. Look at it. It's not even, you can't even have people there. You have tarps over the, there's water everywhere, et cetera. So it's worth zero. Okay, what do you do with that valuation? Your argument is, well, I want then to get what I could have sold it for. That's what the owner is saying, what I could have sold the business for, but for all of these problems, like if it were actually a nice, clean operating store. I don't know if you have an expert that values that, like a hypothetical valuation, if it were in the same condition it was in, but it seems like you still have to subtract. You're figuring out what you can't sell it for, right?
I mean,
isn't that,
Your Honor?
Isn't that what you're asking for? And that the best measure of that is what he bought it for X number of years earlier, rather than having someone else come in and say, okay, looking at the condition of what it was 4 years ago and what would that be worth now, you could also have an expert give that valuation, right? Two valuations, the zero and what it would be worth at sale if it looked better.
Right, Your Honor.
Appellant
that,
also
I think
claims,
that is the best measure. Oops, excuse me, Your Honor.
Appellant also claims, however, that the trial court failed to find that your client didn't mitigate damages and that he had in fact breached the contract as well, and or breached the lease terms, and that there ought to be some offsets.
Your Honor, with regard to the mitigation efforts first, I think the record is just flagged with all of the efforts that Mr. Shakir did to try to mitigate the damages. All he did was want to have his store in an operating condition from 2015 until 2019, continued to try to get appellants to fix the roof, tried to bring a rent escrow action, which resulted in an agreement and a court order, which was not followed, tried to get the city, or the city got involved. There were numerous mitigation efforts, including trying to get a technician up, and appellants denied the technician that Mr. Shakir had to get up there to see what would need to be done to try to mitigate that. And so the record's full of mitigation efforts, and that simply Mr. Shakir tried but was unable to do anything else, and the repairs were never made, and he ultimately lost the business. With regard to the offsets, this was set up in a first to breach the contract case. I see I'm out of time.
Finish your thought, Mr. Hendrickson. You can.
Yes, and if we go back to the summary judgment proceeding, you'll see that, and I understand Mr. Hansen saying he wasn't counsel at that time, and neither was I, but looking at all the arguments there, their argument was that the first to breach was when Mr. Shakir stopped paying rent in January, February, and March, when he had no heat at the very end, and that their claim then was to try to accelerate payments for the rest of the 10 years of the lease. The trial court held that this was a first to breach, and it's the MTS case cited in here, and determined that the appellants were the first to breach, and it excused any other offsets, including what they were seeking for Mr. Shakir to pay those rent payments when he had no heat and leaks in a Minnesota winter in 2018. And so the court excused that, and the other evidence of the offsets. And again, I think a lot of these arguments were
I think at this point, Mr. Hendrickson, I've let you out of enough time, so I am going to cut you off now.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Hansen. You'll have the last words, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors and Counsel. Just a couple things I want to talk about here quickly. About the heating. We're hearing about no heat. There was no heat. Look at page 14 of our brief, the record of this case. The HVAC unit, which is immediately above the unit, is the responsibility of the plaintiff, the appellee in this case, to respond. And because that is the unit that's above this commercial unit, and he did nothing to fix that. So he sat there with no heat, had a contractual obligation to fix it, didn't fix it. The person he brought out testified at trial, and the person he brought out testified at trial that he didn't have a license, he didn't have a permit, he wasn't insured or bonded to do this particular work. At this time in the city. And so that's why my client didn't let him on the roof. There is no evidence that they brought somebody out that was licensed to fix this, which was their obligation to fix it. If the heat went out and the pipes froze, that is what caused the damage to the unit. And that is their breach. The pipes froze because the heater broke, and they didn't shut off the water, and they didn't fix the heater. And then they pay my client for it, and it's their and it's their obligation. With regard to this damage,
I mean, I think that's just, with all due respect, I mean, that ship sailed, as to you know, who breached the lease and who didn't do what. You know, the issue on appeal that we're that you're arguing now is the damages. So, you know, in looking at the district court's order, you know, she clearly concluded that Mr. Hendrickson's client did not meet his burden of proof for future damages as outlined in Exhibit 31, but she did say he's met his damages for loss of a business, 136,882. So my question is, in your mind, why is that number not supported by the evidence? 136,882.
Because that was the amount of money that he claimed that he bought the business for 4.5 years prior. And he also testified that he operated the business profitably for those 4.5 years. So we don't have any evidence of how much money he made for the time of the business, the time he was in the business for the years, for those years. It's an improper measure of damages.
So what would you say, well, I guess was the evidence when you say operated profitably, that means that he recouped the investment of 136 and then plus made profit on top of that?
We don't know. He didn't present evidence to that.
Okay.
He said that he said that it was a business that he operated for all those years profitably, while at the same time saying that he was losing money because he had to close it all the time because it was leaked. There's all kinds of internal inconsistencies in the testimony in this case.
And so
to the damages portion.
What if there had been an expert that came in and if he had had an expert that came in and looked at the store and said, this is not, you know, in my expert opinion, it's not saleable. It's worth nothing. It's worth nothing. What would the damages be in that case?
I would have to see what that opinion was based upon. You're asking me to speculate.
Yes, I am. I'm asking you to speculate that there is an opinion, an expert testimony that looks at the store and says it's no longer saleable and it's worth nothing.
It could then no longer be.
How would the district court measure damage?
I think that whose responsibility that was for would depend on what the expert based that on and why the expert said that was.
Okay, so just I'm trying to get to the legal issue of damages. Let's take a different case. We'll make it not even yours, so you don't have to worry that it's not, you know, what the facts support. Let's assume there's a breach by a landlord that wrecks a store. It's their breach. Water comes flooding in, ruins it all. An expert testifies it's no longer saleable and is worth nothing. What legally is a district court meant to do if the district court finds it's a landlord's breach that ruined the store such that the business is no longer saleable?
It would be the plaintiff's burden of proof to prove up the damages.
And what would they need to do?
Well, it would have to mitigate their damages.
Let's assume that mitigation is not an issue. They didn't have an obligation to mitigate. It's ruined. I'm just trying to figure out how you measure it legally. If it's worth zero, what do you look at to determine, well, what the damages are? And I'm asking you to assume a breach. It's the landlord's breach. There was no duty to mitigate, and it's zero, just legally. I understand you don't think those are the facts of this case, but legally, what's necessary to give the district court information to make a damages measurement?
I don't know. That would be up to an evaluation expert. You're asking me to speculate to a question. I don't know, but presumably it would be the number of months they could operate it. I mean, it would just depend on too many factors. Because presumably you're assuming something is worth absolutely zero. I mean, probably nothing's worth zero. So I'm sorry. And it looks like my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision.